memory of your sister. Tonight is the last night of Cheshvan, so we want to make special mention of her. Her neshama should have an aliyah. Tova Bas Avram, is that the Hebrew name? Yeah. Okay, so, of course, well, thank you. Thank you for your generosity. So, what I wanted to discuss today was the beginning of the fourth parak, as we're starting a new parak, which highlights all of the differences. And the Mishnah contrasts monetary cases with capital cases in 11 different ways. And we've already begun to see this. The first Mishnah, let's just remind ourselves, for a standard monetary case, how many judges are required? Three judges. And for a capital case, we have a requirement of 23. Okay, so again, you know, the stakes are much higher. What's required is a much larger court. But that's just one of 11 differences, as we'll see here. And these differences are not random. It's not like, you know, there are 11 arbitrary differences. But the differences all boil down to one common denominator, which is that the system of justice is slanted in the direction of the accused. And we have a parallel here, of course, in America, that a person is presumed innocent until proven guilty. The prosecution always has the burden of proof, okay? But we'll see that there's a much more dramatic expression of this in halachic sources, that to convict somebody of a capital crime is extremely difficult, and all of the differences are really patterned in that direction. It actually bears mentioning in this context that in the Mishnah, the end of the first parak of Masechta Makos, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon have a famous statement that if they were around when the Sanhedrin was adjudicating capital cases, they would have successfully undermined every capital prosecution. They say we would have undermined it. And there are ways to undermine it. If you ask certain kinds of questions, which are called not drishos and chakiros, but bedikos. Bedikos are things that are not directly germane to the case, but are circumstantial. Like, okay, you're saying you're witness to murder. So how tall was the murderer? Was he over 6 feet tall or under 6 feet tall? What color was his shirt? You say it was pink. Would you say it was more magenta? Or you'd say it was more of a pastel? So you could undermine things that way. And Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon say that. Even Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who says he doesn't quite go that far, he says that a Beis Din that would convict somebody of a capital crime once every 70 years, Nikra Chavlanis, is considered to be a very destructive court. Okay, so you have this kind of an undercurrent within the halachic system. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel comes back and says, then we'll go over to Isaac. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel has a famous comment about Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon. Again, it's all theoretical, because once the Sanhedrin was no longer positioned in the Lishkat Hagazis, where they met in their chambers in the Beis HaMikdash, they weren't allowed to adjudicate capital cases. That's the Gemara Avodah Zarah Daf Chesam Beis. But be that as it may, and Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon came after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, it's all theoretical, but Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, Afein Marbe Shofchem Dam B'Yisrael, that this kind of attitude is only going to lead to more murder, because we have a principle of Kol HaMerachim Alach Zarim. A person is merciful to those who are cruel. So fully Sachter Rachmanim, all he's doing is, you know, causing more anarchy and danger in society. Isaac, go ahead.
Have there been any documented actual capital cases?
Oh, no, numerous. And there's actually, you know, even cases where Beit Din implemented capital punishment against the rules. This is what we call Makin Ve'onshin Shalom Min Adin, sort of the halachic equivalent to martial law. So this famous case, which is discussed in the Gemara, where Shimon ben Chetach hanged 80 women for witchcraft in the city of Ashkelon. Next time you're there, you can, you know, think about that. You know, the point is that again, there was a need to be go there as a parrot, so to speak. So
as sailor.
Yeah, there you go. Something like, well, I think 80 is much more than ever were convicted in Salem. That was just one day. Okay, so echadine maminos echadine fashos bedrisha v'chakira shenemar mishpat echad yialachem. Then in theory, both monetary cases as well as capital cases are subject to drisha v'chakira. And again, drisha and chakira are questions, unlike bedikos, which are circumstantial. Drisha and chakira are material to the case. So, for example, you say there was a loan. You say that Ziggy owes Isaac $1,000. Are you sure it was really $1,000? What were the terms of the loan? That's what Drisha v'Chakira is. You remember that the Gemara in the first parak Daf Beis Amid Beis, and we mentioned it at the time when we just started the Masechta, says that even though this is the Din Daraisa, Mishpat Echad Yelachem, that the same standards of witness interrogation would apply both to capital and monetary cases, we don't implement this in monetary cases for a 1 year of free membership. Does anybody remember why in monetary cases Rabbi Chanina came and said that the rabbis uprooted the Din Daraisa? This is one of the classical examples of Yesh Koach Biyad V'chamim Lakor Davar Min HaTorah B'Shei V'Al Taseh, that the rabbis have the right to overrule the Torah law. So why did they waive these interrogations in the monetary cases? What was the concern? Access to capital markets. There was a very deep concern that if what was going to be required for a person to recover the outlay of his loan was that he was going to have to go to court. You know what he'd say? It's not worth the trouble. Okay, it's not worth the trouble altogether. I'm not going to loan money, and Kadesh Lotin Aldelas Bifne Lavin, so that there would be always access to capital markets, we actually overruled the Torah principle of Mishpat Echad Yelachem. Okay, so that's the one point of similarity. So one point of similarity leads to 11 differences. We'll see how many we can get through before a quarter of the hour. Mabin Dine Mamanos Dine Nefashos. Dine Mamanos Mishlosha Dine Nefashos Fasim Mishlosha. We already mentioned that. 3 verses 23. Dine mamanos poschen ben deschus ben lechova. In a monetary case, either, so to speak, the prosecution or defense can start. Doesn't really matter. Dine fashos poschen deschus ben poschen lechova. When it's a capital case, you can only open in defense of the accused. So again, it's all slanted towards the one who's accused. You know, first impression makes a big difference in halacha and in psychology and in life in general. So the defense always gets to speak first. Dine mamanos matan al piyachad bein l'schos bein l'chova. Dine nefashos matan al piyachad l'schos val pishnayim l'chova. So in a monetary case, as we discussed yesterday, and this was the great wrinkle, one of the most fascinating halachos, if it's two against one in either direction, say two against one, say, sorry, Siggy, you really do owe Isaac $1,000. So that doesn't matter. Remember, we said if it's two against zero, we'll talk about that case in just a second. Right. So if it's two against zero, remember, this was the irony, and we mentioned the position of Reb Chaim Brisk about this. Two against one, Rubo Kekulo, we consider that we really have three judges. Two against zero, what do we have to do? We have to be Mosef HaDayanim. Okay, so now let's say there are 23 judges in the capital case. So let's say 12 of the guys are saying the guy's innocent, 11 are saying he's guilty, he gets off. 12 versus 11, majority of one, he gets off. Let's say 12 guys are saying he's guilty, 11 guys are saying he's innocent. So you'd say, okay, well, that's the majority in the other direction, tough luck. Doesn't work that way. Lo ka tayascha l'schus hatayascha l'chova. Hatayascha l'chova, you need at least a majority of two. And since there are 23 members of the court, right, you can't actually have a majority of two, it would need to be a 13 against 10 majority. And that's a very important principle in its own right. Again, what we keep on stressing is this idea that we're always on the side of the accused. So Siggy, if God forbid you did decide to take the measure that you alluded to a second ago, I know it's a rocky thing. You would be secure in the knowledge that you would not be convicted by a majority of one. Okay? So just, I'm not encouraging you on here. I'm just, sharing the relevant information that you might want to be aware of before you take any radical actions. Okay. Dine mamanos machzirin ben eschos ben lechova. After a monetary case has been decided, we talked about this in terms of the rules of admissibility and evidence yesterday, but that even if the case has been decided, monetary case, and then some new evidence emerges, one can reopen ben eschos ben lechova, whether it's in the person's benefit or to his detriment. Dine nefashos machzirin l'schos. You can bring the person back to court because one of the judges realizes, oh, we may have a way to exonerate him, but once he's exonerated, you cannot bring him back. Ein machzirin lechova. And that's, I think, a very important point. Dine mamanos hakol melamdin schos vechova. In a monetary cases, even those who are not on the formal bezdin, but those who are sort of talmidim in training, are able to offer arguments in both directions. Dine nefashos hakol melamdin schos ve'ein hakol melamdin chova. So in capital cases, any of those who are present can suggest a rationale for exoneration, but if somebody there, one of the Talmidim sitting in training, he's going to be a Dayan one day when he gets a little bit more experience. If he realizes that they're all exonerating the guy wrongly and he's got a good Savara, he's got a good rationale to convict the guy, he has to keep quiet. We don't listen to anybody besides the panel, the judges, for these purposes. So again, all of these distinctions run precisely in the same direction. Dine mamnos hamlamid chova mlamid zchus, hamlamid zchus mlamid chova. The same person who offered an argument for exoneration can offer an argument for conviction in a monetary case. But dine nefashos, in a capital case, hamlamid chova, somebody who has spoken out in terms of convicting type of argument, he can then come back and make an exonerating argument. If he sees things differently, he's allowed to change his mind. Melamed tzchus, ava melamed tzchus, somebody who started out defending the accused, eno yachol lachzor v'lamed chova, he can't come back and present an argument for a conviction. This is reminiscent of the halacha by Edim, not by Dayanim, but by Edim, kevan shehigid shuvin ochozer umagid, that an aid gets one crack at it. So Rashi explains, based on the Gemara, that this isn't exactly true, that he would be given an opportunity if he really thinks that he had it wrong and he was erroneously exonerating. Our goal is not corruption of justice. So before the final stage of the trial, so to speak, just before the verdict is issued, he would be allowed to speak again. But again, in the process of argumentation, he would not be given an opportunity, once he offered an exonerating argument, to offer an argument for conviction. Dine mamanos danin bayom v'gomer balayla, you can finish it that night. The pasuk says that with respect to inheritance, actually, that generally mishpat takes place biyom hanchilo espanav. That's what the pasuk says in Parashas Kisetze. So we know that Beis Din can only start a proceeding during the day, but if it carries on into the evening, especially on the short winter days like this, Beis Din is allowed to rule in the monetary case at night. However, dine nefashos, when it comes to capital cases, done bayom v'gomer bayom, they can finish in the day. They're not allowed to carry their arguments over into the night. And the reason for that is very simple. We don't want the judges to fatigue and make any errors. Dine mamnos gomen bo bayom, the case can be only a one-day trial, bein l'schus, bein l'chova, even if it means convicting the fellow. Dine nefashos gomen bo bayom l'schus. So they want to exonerate the guy, it can be a one-day trial. However, if they're going to convict the guy, they're not allowed to convict that guy that day. They all have to go home and sleep on it, and then they can come back the next day. Ubiyom shva achrav lechova. And lefikach, for that reason, and with this we'll conclude, ein dan in lo be'erev Shabbos v'lo be'erev Yom Tov. We don't actually have the Beis Din sit down for a capital case on Erev Shabbos, on Friday, or on Erev Yom Tov, because again, for a conviction, they would have to do that on Shabbos and Yom Tov, and that would be a violation of the Isser of lo sevaru eish b'chomosh roseichem yom ha-Shabbos. The simple meaning of that is that you're not allowed to light a fire. That since one of the misos Beis Din is actually sreifa, not literally an auto de fe, but you would actually pour molten lead, a person would have to consume it. So the rabbis have a drasha that you're not allowed to perform any capital case on a capital punishment on Shabbos. So you say, no big deal. Why can't the judges actually sit and come up with a verdict on Shabbos and then make the guy wait until Sunday? So that's an Isser D'oraisa. That's something called Inoy Hadin. So unlike in America, a person is on death row for 37 years, or for 47 years, or 520 years, or however long it takes through the appeals process. In halacha, as soon as the sentence is given that the person is convicted for a capital penalty, we kill him right away, not out of vindictiveness or in a brutal measure, but on the contrary, we think that having to sit on death row is a form of psychological torture. So again, that's why you can't hold the case on Friday or on Erev Yontif, because if they need to convict the guy, they'll need to do it the next day, and then they wouldn't be able to implement the penalty. So there's humanity, which is granted even to the capital offender, and it's in fact very beautiful at the Gemara. There are only five places in Shas, the best of my recollection, where the Gemara darshan's a halacha based on the pasuk v'ahavta to l'rayecha kamocha. So two of them have to do with bror lo misa yafet, that when you put somebody to death, you have to do it in such a way that reflects dignity of all human beings. As the Torah says, that's the makar for kavura, of giving a burial is in a capital case. So again, we have great sensitivity, humanity, and compassion, even within the context of a capital case. And the eight distinctions that we got to today, we'll get to the other three tomorrow, again, all point in the direction of looking to avoid having to convict anybody of a capital penalty. But again, Siggy, just to speak to your point, that is not meant to encourage any form of reckless behavior. Rabbi Chananya ben Akash Amar, Ratzon HaKadosh Baruch